You're listening to Called to Homeschool, episode number 209, Hobbies and Homeschool. Are you feeling the call to homeschool and you're not sure what to do? Or maybe you are already homeschooling and it doesn't look like what you hoped it would. My name is Megan Thomas and I'm a certified life coach, a mother of seven, and a homeschool pro with more than a decade of experience. I can show anyone how to create success in their homeschool, and I'd love to show you how. Are you ready? Hello, and welcome back to another episode. This is going to be a two-part episode. The first part, I want to talk to you all about hobbies and homeschool and all those beautiful things and see, is it really possible to do both? The second part is going to be a race recap from my most recent Ironman. That way, if you do not care to hear about my race recap, which people have unlovingly told me that they really don't care, you can simply just stop the podcast and you don't need to send me a mean message. So there you go. So if you want to, we're going to talk about hobbies. And then if you want to hear about my race, stay on for the end. And if not, then just turn it off and have a wonderful day. All right, let's dive in. What is a hobby? So here's for my quick Google searches. So a hobby is just something that is an activity done regularly in one's leisure time for pleasure. So then I was wondering if hobbies matter. Why bother having them? Is this important? All of those types of things. And I found this: spending time on an activity that you enjoy can improve your mental health and well-being. Research shows that people with hobbies are less likely to suffer from stress, low mood, and depression. Activities that get you out and about can make you feel happier and more relaxed. Yes, so having a hobby can help you in so many beautiful ways. I am a big fan of hobbies. Sometimes I joke that I like to collect them. Like, ooh, this seems amazing. I should maybe get into that. I love working out. I have a friend that we made homemade cheese and we made homemade pasta. I love gardening. I love homesteading, all of these crazy things. Thinking about trying meat chickens, raising our own pig, fun stuff like that. These are all hobbies that I really, really enjoy. So how in the world do you have a hobby and homeschool? So I want to start with talking about that you can have any hobby you want, but you cannot have every hobby you want. I'm going to say that again one more time. You can have any hobby you want, but you cannot have every hobby you want. That means you will need to pick the hobby or hobbies that speak to you the most so that you are not running yourself ragged and thin and trying to do all the things. Like, I'm going to go travel and I'm going to have a garden and I'm going to do X, Y, Z. And like, you're right, then homeschool will not fit. So you have to be very clear on which ones bring me the most joy and the ones that I could actually do while I am in this homeschool phase. I've had the opportunity to coach this really amazing team, and she has been really struggling with some pretty severe depression and anxiety. And we've been coaching every week, and she's gotten to a point where she's now functioning, which is amazing. And she's not in bed all day. She's not just checking out on her phone, and she is like really getting out of this pretty severe depression. And as we went through our session, I realized like, so she's kind of getting out of this, like this deep, dark hole, but now she has no joy. She has no hope. She has no dreams. And I realized she has no hobbies. She has nothing that interests her because she has been struggling so much for so long with this dark sadness, right? So I challenged her to just find one thing that brings her joy. We talked about a ton of ideas, and her assignment was to let me know what she liked. I was so excited when she started sending me pictures of her gardening. She had found a hobby that spoke to her, and she was so excited about her flower garden. She went and got a kiddie swimming pool, and she filled it with, I think she did rocks on the bottom, and then she did all this dirt, and then she found the most beautiful seeds for flowers. And she is just ecstatic to watch something grow, to nurture something, to take care of something, and then to see the fruits of it. And it was so amazing for the first time, all of a sudden, the first time in a long time, that all of a sudden she has joy. She has something she looks forward to. She has these plants she wants to take care of. And all of a sudden, this hobby is helping her to transition out of this dark space into this looking forward of having hope and having joy. So I've seen mamas who go out and want to help all of their kids with all of their hobbies and all of their dreams and forget that they might need one too. I'm all for helping my children have a dream and beautiful things within reason. Because if you forget that you might need that too, you are going to get to a place where you might resent your children, where you are doing these things begrudgingly, where it's becoming like your hobby is now the taskmaster and it's not fun anymore. And it just starts creating some negative energy. So how in the world do you homeschool and have a hobby? So my favorite thing to tell people when looking at this, like looking at their calendar, schedule you first, my friend. You have to make it a priority. And even if it's one thing that's 30 minutes in the week, that you're like, that's for me. Walking is my hobby and it brings me great joy. I actually love like going running in the morning when the world is still asleep and we live by the most beautiful mountains. And when the sun is coming up and the world is quiet, it's like, oh, this is amazing. So if you're like that, walking and going out and having that beautiful moment that speaks to my soul, schedule it in your calendar. Schedule you first so that you are not running on empty. You also may need to get a little creative in your scheduling. So that may look like doing it early in the morning, maybe doing it later when the kids are in bed. Doing a kid swap with somebody, right? Like, hey, I want to go do this on Tuesday afternoons. You want to go do that on Thursday afternoons. What if we swap kids and I'll watch yours, you watch mine, right? Like you start getting creative. Maybe there's a neighbor girl that you're like, I actually did this when I started running. I had two little boys and I had the cutest little neighbor girl and I paid her to come over for 30 minutes, maybe an hour. And I just would run. And like, she was happy. My boys thought she was fun and it was really short and sweet. And I was like, I've started to get creative of how can I do it? And I think I was in the phase where kids weren't sleeping well at night yet. So getting up early in the morning felt challenging. So I figured a way I could go in the afternoon. So get creative of how you could fit it in your schedule. I have been able to exercise regularly now with homeschool because now I do it in the mornings before everyone gets up. And I have been doing this for years. When I had a toddler who was an early riser, I would actually take them to CrossFit with me and I'd pack them a book and I'd pack them some snacks and I'd say, sure, come with me. Because like, this is important to me and you're awake and dad is asleep and all the other kids are asleep. So sure, come on with mom and just lug them with me. Let's see what else. My kids would just want to be with me, right? So then I would just include them in the hobby that I was doing. Now that my kids are getting older, I can take them to the pool with me because I don't have to worry about them drowning or things like that, right? And then they will swim a few laps with me and then they'll go and play in the pool. Let's see, I really have been able to do a lot of my exercise early in the morning. And even like when my two little boys were young, I did do it in the afternoon. But then as I started having more kids, I found it was just easier to just figure out how to do it in the morning. And then maybe that meant I took a nap in the afternoon when my little kids were taking a nap. So just getting creative with your schedule. And now it's fun with exercise. A lot of my kids, it's become their hobby too, because we've included them. And so now most of them go to CrossFit with my husband and me, and that's pretty fun. With my hobby of gardening, I've just always included my kids because honestly, I kind of needed their help. I've let them have their own little spots where they got to plant their own seeds, but they are also helping me weed. They're helping me can. They're helping me. I've had them pick grapes. I didn't realize with grape juice, you could just put the whole thing in the grape pot to make your grape juice. So we'd have buckets of grapes and I would just let them sit there. We would sit and chat in the kitchen and pull all the grapes off. We've snapped green beans together. They've cut up pears and peaches and we've made applesauce, right? And just different things like that where it just became a school subject. Like, hey, today we're making tomato sauce, friends. Like, hey, part of yard work, which I feel like is awesome to teach kids to work hard. Like maintaining a yard and gardening and all that stuff, it just became a school subject. So something that I love, I was able to incorporate it with my kids with school. Let's see. Now there are definitely times and seasons with hobbies and the extent that you can do your hobbies. So I do work out my whole pregnancies. And I like that is so good for my mental health to working out like that. It just speaks to me. So I definitely go a lot easier, but like just moving and doing that through my whole pregnancy. But when I have a baby, I definitely have to take some time off. But when my baby's about 6 weeks old, I figure out how to start exercising again. I may nurse them and then do a much shorter, much simpler exercise. Maybe that's in my own home. I've even done stuff where just I've strapped a baby to me and done simple things, right? Going on a walk or something like that. Just something to keep the hobby going. Hiking, I've done that a lot with the baby strapped to me. All those fun things that I can do with the baby strapped to me, or just make it a little bit shorter so that I'm not gone as long away from a nursing baby. When I trained for my first Ironman, I did look up the dates finally. I never remembered when the date was. So it was 8 years ago. My youngest was, when I started training, he was three. He was four by the time I did the race, but he was three when I started training and he was sleeping the nights and obviously he wasn't nursing. And so I was able to train a much longer amount of time because now I don't have a newborn and I wasn't pregnant. So if your hobby is important to you, make it a priority and then do it. And if I will tell you, it's not a priority if you're like, I just can't find time for this. Because if something truly is a priority to you, you will find time. So think about if you have to use the restroom and not wetting yourself is a priority and going to the restroom in the bathroom is a priority. You will figure it out whether you are nursing, whether or not somebody comes to the door, whatever is going on. It's like, hold on, I've got to go to the bathroom. So like when you think about it like that is such a priority for me. It's like oxygen. It's like water. I have to have this or I go crazy. Then make it that big of a priority for you. And then you need to adapt and adjust, right? With the amount of children you have and how long you can do it. And so if you're like traveling is really speaks to me and is a hobby I like, then you'll need to get creative of like, okay, do I travel on the weekends? Do I take my kids with me? Are we going to be world schoolers? Are we going to live in an RV and do stuff like that so that I can have my hobbies and homeschool? So you start getting creative, but when you make it a priority, you can start finding ways like, oh, here's how I could do it. Here's what I could do. When we did one of our Christmas trips was a triathlon. And so George was under one. He was a baby. And I borrowed a running trailer from somebody so I could do all the runs with all the kids. I borrowed a bike trailer so I could just lug them behind me. And then swimming, we would just take turns holding the baby. And so like we just got creative because it was a priority. So that's how you know whether or not it's a priority for you, if you will figure out a way to get it done and really think and get creative about that. So I want to just talk a little bit about the cool side effects of having a hobby. So not only does it help you and having joy and helping your mental health, but it has some pretty cool side effects for your kids. Number one, it can be super inspiring to your kids. I am in awe of just watching my babies like be my biggest cheerleaders. Friends, whether or not you race, I don't know, maybe you don't understand this part, but like I'm not fast. There's probably no chance that I'm ever getting on a podium or winning or doing anything like that. But like my kids don't care. They think I'm the coolest person ever. And when I'm out and I'm training and they're like, how long's your bike ride today? Or how long do you need to run today? They're like so into it and so inspired. And I'm watching some of my kids like, okay, how could I do an Ironman? How could I do these things? Maybe I just want to run a 5K or maybe I want to do a cool bike thing. Or what if that is CrossFit or something else like physically? I'm watching my kids really push themselves. Like, wow, that is super inspiring. Could I do something like that too? So that's one of the side effects I've seen. Another one is, showing my kids that no matter how old they are, they can go after their dreams. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I think, like, maybe when I was younger, I thought this too, that when you have, like, you get married, like you have your life, like we have all these kind of like plans of what life is. And it's, you're born, you learn all the basics, you go to school for 12 years, then maybe you go to college, you get married, you have children, and then what? And it's like, we stop planning and having dreams. Like, okay, I check. I did all these checks. And now what? Now I'm just a slave to you, my children, so you can do the same path so that when you are in your 30s or 40s done having children, that you can be a slave for them and they can just help them with their hobbies. No, I want to show my children that their age doesn't matter, that they can go after things, right? I love on race day when I'm running with different athletes or biking with different athletes. And I ran with this gentleman and he was in his 70s. And he's like, yeah, I just started a few years ago. I thought, why not? And I thought, yes, why not? Just because you missed your 20s or your 30s, 40s, right? Like here he was in his 70s. Like I decided to go for it and just try something. And I would love for my kids to have that mindset of just like, oh, I didn't try this as a teenager, so I can never do a dance class. Yeah, you can. You can find adult dance classes. You can find so many awesome things to just go and try. So I love that part of showing my kids, like, here I am in my 40s doing some pretty cool, hard physical things that a lot of us would think like, well, that's a young man's sport. Like, nah, I'm going to do it anyway. Right. So I love showing them that after they do the steps of like what we traditionally think we're supposed to do, that they still get to have hopes and dreams. It's not like, okay, we had kids, I got married, like now I'm done. It's like, no. And also I'm going to figure out these really cool things and I'm going to try things. And they might be awful. And then I'll know I don't like those hobbies. And I think I talked about this before when I tried quilting and I hated it. It was awful. For me, it did not speak to my soul. I found it frustrating. Like I wanted to huck my sewing machine because it just was not fun for me. Great. Now I know. Right. But like I tried that. I probably was in my 40s or maybe my 30s. Like I tried that. Like now I know I don't like it. I did cake decorating classes with my sisters and I don't want to be a professional baker. They kind of stress me out, but I like doing them for family members for my wedding present to people. Like that's fun to me. But I wouldn't know if I wouldn't have gone and tried a cake decorating class with my mom and my sister. So like just showing them to keep trying and going after things and like there's no age cut off. And that they can go after dreams and create new dreams at any age. So you can have hobbies and homeschool. Just make it a priority and then you can make it happen. Now to part two. And if you are like, fantastic, Meg, hallelujah, hop off. I'm going to do a race recap because I just did the Ironman 70.3 in St. George, Utah. And I'm going to do a race recap for those of you who care. So this was my white whale. This was my race to go after. So 8 years ago, I attempted this race and I had run marathons before. And so I just had done a lot of running before and I knew how to train for a marathon. Again, wasn't really fast and nothing impressive, but like I knew what you're supposed to do, how to train. So I took the same mindset of a marathon training and applied it to an Ironman training, which I have found out is not the same. Because with running training, you a lot of times don't ever run the full distance. So you with a marathon, you'd run 26.2 miles, but sometimes like in trainings only 20 miles, right? So it's like, okay, same idea with Ironman. That's what I thought, that I was just slowly increasing my swim, slowly increasing my run distance and my biking distance and all those types of things. And then I went for the Ironman and The swim was fine. I'm not afraid of the water. So that is good that I don't have the fear of water and whatnot. So the swim was fine. And I finished the swim and then I got to the bike and it destroyed me. Like I was so unprepared. I had no idea about fuel. I had like how to eat properly on a bike. Like again, I knew how to do this with a marathon, but I had no idea how to do this with an Ironman. And so definitely did not have enough food. I think I ate one thing before the bike and then went for it. I had trained hills. This is a really hilly course. Some people say that the 70.3 is the hardest in St. George is one of the hardest ones in the world. So like, why not start with that one? So like totally dying running out of energy, running out of fuel. I didn't take salt tablets or anything like that. And there's a canyon in St. George called Snow Canyon. And back when I tried it 8 years ago, you actually did the canyon twice, that you biked up it, went down it, and then biked up it again. And that second time when I biked up it, like, I was done. I was so done. I sat down and I cried. Like, what have I got myself into? Like, you start going, I call it like when I start going crazy, because like, I'm so depleted, there's nothing left in me. And then I finally get to the top, I've cried. And, like, I still gotta go, there's nobody coming to get me. So I did the last 10 miles, get in, and I was 1 minute too slow. So I didn't get to go do the run, which was probably for the best, because I was so depleted that it probably would have ended really poorly. But I was mad, and we grabbed my gear and we left and just drove home. And I don't think, like, I talk all the time, and that was one of those quiet drives where I didn't want to shower, I didn't want to do anything. And I just sat there mad in the car, of just so angry that I had not finished. So like, that's my last time experiencing this Ironman. So then I did the one in Oceanside last year, and I've talked about that one before. There's a podcast episode about it if you want to go check it out. And then I realized I needed to hire a coach, which made all the difference. So I did that one last year. And then I thought, I want to beat this St. George race. And so, like, at least I know what I'm getting myself into. And, so like, let's go for it. I still have my same coach, Cammie Banks. She's phenomenal. She actually raced it with me, so we got to meet in person, which was awesome. She's phenomenal. And so I'm just learning so much more about nutrition, so much more about how to fuel during a race, all those types of things. So some of my, obstacles with training this time. So I did the Oceanside. Let's see, I did it last April, and then I've slowly put on 20 pounds, and that makes a big difference when you're training. And so what happened is, I've talked before where I struggle with seizures, and one of the things that can trigger a seizure is not enough food. And so, like, after I finished Oceanside, like, my weight was coming off, I was feeling pretty good, all those types of things. And then I thought, okay, so now I'm not exercising as much, so I need my calories to be a little bit lower. And it really wasn't that low. It was like maybe 1700 to 1800 calories, but it was too low for me apparently. And so then I started having a lot of seizures. So then I had to up my calories and trying to figure all of that out. So I gained 20 pounds, which, like, greatly affects your ability to go fast on certain things. So anyways, during this Ironman training, I actually struggled with seizures, and then I got scared to really push myself, because if I didn't have enough fuel and then I would push myself physically, I would have a seizure. So it was a couple scary ones, happened on a bike in my basement. So like, trying to deal with all of that. So then not really pushing myself and all that, just kind of scary, but I was able to figure out fuel so that they stopped happening. But that's like going into my race was part of my training program. So get there, race week. I went down Monday. The race is on a Saturday. I go down Monday. I actually went down a couple times in the winter with my family, and I practiced the snow canyon because I knew how hard it was. Get there Monday, like, train a little bit Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I go to the lake to practice where we are going to be doing our swimming, and the winds are 22 miles per hour. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. So I get in the water anyway, the lake, the waves are humongous, but at least I got in and got a feel of, like, the water temperature wasn't as awful as I thought it was going to be. So I thought, okay, at least I know what the temperature will be, all those types of things. And then luckily race day, the weather was super calm, for the swim. And so, we started, the morning was gorgeous, beautiful pink sunrise, and then the race started. So the swim was the only thing I'm a little bit sad about, that it was my slowest swim ever, by like 5 minutes, which kind of stunk. So I don't know, like, what was going on, because I thought I had a good pace going. The only thing I can think of is when we were going out, so it's a 1.2 mile swim, and as we were going out, that sun is just blinding you, and I was getting really disoriented of where, like, of they call them the buoys. I'm saying that weird. I can't think of how to say that right. But the little markers to, like, show you to, like, the right swim path. So I think I was serpentining a little bit, but with that sun in my eyes, like, I was getting really lost and disoriented. So I was keeping my head above water because that was the only way I could see where I was going. So it wasn't until we turned and we're coming back to the boat dock that, like, I was able to put my head underwater. So, like, I have to be understanding that, like, putting your head above water and trying to swim that way, you are going to be a little bit slower. So got out of the water. It took me 52 minutes. So I was a little bummed about that, but I swam it and I was fine. So I went and got on my bike and it's so, so much better with fuel. Like, this is crazy how much, like I had to be much more intentional with it and how much more it helped me. So within my coach's coaching program, we have accountability partners, and my partner, she's done a bunch of races. So she's kind of told me what she's done. My coach tells me what she's done. So you have to kind of experiment and see what works best for you. And what I found for me, that if I take a sip, and my water always has stuff in it, right? To like electrolytes and all that. So taking a sip about every 10 minutes, every 40 minutes, I have to fuel myself, and every hour I take a salt tablet. And so, it was kind of good. Like, it helped me mentally to not just be like, oh, I'm on a bike, I'm stuck on a bike, but it was like, okay, 10 minutes, time to get a drink. Okay. 40 minutes, time to eat. So that really helped me. Time to drink, time to do a salt tablet, all those types of things. So that helped me, having extra weight on, you feel it definitely going uphill, and definitely was feeling that, and just a little bit slower. But the first hour I averaged 15 miles per hour. So I was pretty happy with that. And then I forgot how hilly it was, but I felt pretty good because I had enough energy. So even though I was going a little bit slower, I was able to get up the hills and like was doing all right. There was one part I had driven the course in the winter time, and there was one part where I missed a section and I was like, oh, okay, it's fine. It just goes through that city and then it meets over here and not a big deal. And I'm so glad I did not see what that part of the road looked like, because it was this big, huge climb, which was so steep. And then this descent that was so, so stinking steep the other way, which to me is like more terrifying than climbing. So I'm hitting 33 miles per hour on your tiny little bike. And I'm like braking, like, please don't die today. Please don't die today. So that was exciting, facing my fears of going fast down a hill, meeting lots of lovely, nice humans. There was one guy, we were laughing so hard because on a climb, I could pass him every time. And I'm not a fast climber. And so we were laughing because I would zoom past him. And then as soon as it was downhill, he was gone and I couldn't keep up with him. So we did that for quite a while until we got to a long climb. And then I never saw him again until the run. But so like just kind of fun stuff, seeing people. I was really proud of myself for staying so fueled, because I never... on this race, I never went to crazy mode. And like, that's a huge win for me. Another win was with the salt tablets every hour, I never cramped. And like my hamstrings never hurt or different things like that. When I got to Snow Canyon, so it's a 4-mile climb up Snow Canyon. And at the end, it's a 10% grade, pretty darn steep. And for the first 2.5 miles, I felt pretty good and was able to just do it. And then as we are doing that very, very last climb, and you're like I said, it's 4 miles up of this climbing and the end is 10% grade. And I was like, I'm done. I'm just going to walk it. There's no shame in walking this. So I walked about 1/4 mile rest of the way up the hill. And then I got on the last 10 miles of the bike ride are like a really nice descent where it's not too steep, but like a really wide road. And a really, they have like all the Ironman does a really good job of marking the roads of like, here's a bump, here's this, so that it just feels a little bit safer. So I'm so excited that I'm going to have this 10 miles that I'm going to go as fast as I can. It's not going to feel too scary. And then it was the most terrifying side wind. And these bikes are so darn skinny and so light. And so if you've biked with side wind, like I feel like you bike and it like knocking you over and you have to hurry and steer back the other way. And so this part I was so excited for, it was so terrifying. And this is like, I'm praying like, okay, Heavenly Father, send me some angels to like keep me up, because like, please don't let me die right now. And so like, I'm trying to like positive self-talk and like, you've got this, you're strong, you're okay, you're safe, and like totally to get myself through that. And then as you come in on the bike, the last mile is they shut down a whole road, and the runners are on one side and the bikers are on the other side. And it was so fun because my family was waiting there for me. So my mom, my husband, and our 3 youngest kids were able to come. So they saw me coming on my bike, like, yes, I beat the cutoff time by like a couple hours, right? So that was super exciting. Then started the run. And it was, oh man, like it was so interesting. Like I said, training was a little bit interesting. So I knew I could plod along and I knew I could walk the whole thing. So I'm like, okay, what's my cutoff time for things? How long do I have? So like I said, it was a pretty slow race, but I was just grateful to finish. And so the run, it was not awful. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. You're just so done and you just want to sit down and like, you have to go. And it's interesting. They do an out and back of two loops. So like the first loop is kind of okay. And it's when you do that second loop and you get to this point where you go to the left and you get to go across the finish line. Or if you have to do the second loop, you go to the right and you go to the loop again. And seeing all these people going to the finish line and knowing I had to go to the right, it was just like this whole like grief of like, oh, you're kidding me. I have to do 6 more miles, or what is it? It's 13.1. So like 6.5 more miles. Like, oh my goodness, this is so hard. So it was interesting. I don't know. The run, I felt pretty good. It was my foot. I actually stopped to see if I had a rock in my shoe. And afterwards, I saw there was a cut on my foot. And I'm wondering if when I came out of the water, because the water was so cold, that I cut my foot on something on the asphalt or the cement. And I couldn't feel it because my foot was cold. And on the bike, you couldn't feel it. But on the run, I felt it. And like at first, I'm like, is there something majorly wrong with my foot? I don't know what's going on. But I was pretty tender the whole entire run. So luckily, it was just a little cut. It's all the way healed now. So something to be mindful of in the future. And I would just find different people to run with. And if we were on the same speed for a while, we would run together. That was the gentleman I ran with for a while that was in his 70s. We ran for maybe a couple miles together. He was delightful. And just different times we would run together. My family got to see them once on the bike and then 3 times on the run. And then they would go to the finish line and waited for me. And friends, I can't even tell you how emotional it was to finish this race, because this was the race that beat me. That like, I was too slow. I was never going to finish. And so you go down in the chute and you have people on both sides and then they have the huge arch, like Ironman, everybody's cheering, everybody's loud. And I get to the front of the chute. I finished my second lap and I just screamed, like I raised my arms up and I was like, everybody, I'm doing it. I'm finishing. Cheer for me. And like, everybody went crazy. I always sprint down the end. I always have like enough gas in the end to sprint. And I do my pose across the finish line with my arms up, and my husband, my kids, my mom were all right there on the other side of the gate. And I finished and like almost not collapsed, but just like, I did it. Like that weight, that burden of like, oh my gosh, I did it. And I just, my husband was like, get over here. And just like I hugged him. He's just like, you did it. You were so amazing. So super duper proud of myself. I love having only 3 of my kids were able to come, but it was so fun. The other kids were messaging me like, how did it go? Good luck, all those awesome things. And just even watching my other kids be inspired by this and just realizing like, here I am in my 40s and I'm doing this. And it didn't matter what my time was and it didn't matter if I'm slow or fast, but like I'm doing these really cool things. So anyways, there's my race cap. That's my favorite hobby right now is triathlons, being crazy with that. And it's a ton of fun. So anyways, love you all. Talk to you next week. Have a good one.
Are you ready to take the concepts learned on this podcast to the next level? Then I invite you to join Mama's Members, a place where I will help you succeed in your family and homeschool beyond what you thought was possible. You will have access to hours of content, a place to ask questions, and weekly coaching calls to help you be the amazing homeschool mom you are called to be. To sign up, go to www.coachmegthomas.com/join. I can't wait to see you there.